This morning, we are starting our look at King David. I'd love to say, turn to 2 Samuel, because I know that's what it says, just to give you a heads up, and you might have to hold Karen back because she's going to be upset. I gave room for David to have 3 weeks, and I think David's going to have a little more than that. Maybe 5 or 6 weeks, and we'll just see how that works. Today we're going to just do some introduction of David, and of course, we first learn of David in the book of 1 Samuel. Today we'll look at some of the attributes that made David a great choice to be king over Israel. When someone mentions to you the name King David, what comes to mind? First word, Bathsheba. Oh, Goliath, greatest king, warrior, shepherd. All of these great, mostly great words, and we're not going to talk about Bathsheba today, but we're going to get into her story here in the next couple weeks, and you're going to learn some things probably about that situation you weren't aware of, some things that were common in the ancient Near East at that time that we don't really think about, but Ruth, chapter 4, verse 20 through 22 says this: Amminadab, father of Nahshon. Nahshon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz. Boaz fathered Obed. Obed fathered Jesse. And Jesse fathered David. Salmon, you may not know this, was married to a harlot. And the harlot's name was Rahab. So Rahab, the harlot, is David's great-great-grandmother. Great lineage. But then, of course, his great-grandmother was Ruth, married to Boaz. Then there was Obed. Jesse, we do not know the name of either of his wives. But I will get into some interesting things about one of them coming up here, because Jesse was married to his wife. He fathered 8 sons, and then he was married to another woman, and Nahash was the king of the Ammonites. Saul conquered the Ammonites. And when he did, Nahash's wife was left without a spouse. So Nahash's wife marries Jesse, and they have 2 daughters. So David's stepmother is the former wife of a king that King Saul conquered. This is starting to sound like a West Virginia family tree here. You go to Israel, you start looking for trailer parks now. When God is working with Samuel and he says, I want you to go to Saul and I want you to tell Saul, guess what, Saul? By the way, no offense if you live in a trailer park. Some of my best friends have lived in trailer parks. He says, go to Saul and tell Saul, I've taken away his kingdom. I've given it to this person who's a man after my own heart. Samuel says, excuse me, God, but what's going to happen here, knowing Saul and how petty and whatnot he can be, is when he finds out I'm going to Bethlehem to anoint David, he's going to kill me, or he's going to kill David. And so God says, well, this isn't a problem. What you're going to do is take some animals with you, and while you're there, you're going to offer up a sacrifice. Yet again, Saul is going to be done in by a sacrifice. And so Samuel, of course, being obedient, he goes to offer the sacrifice. He meets with Jesse, and he says, Jesse, I need you to call together your sons, because from them will be chosen the next king of Israel. So one by one, Jesse's sons are coming before Samuel the prophet, and his oldest son, Eliab, is very tall, very handsome, very strong, a good person for battle. He has the looks, he has the person. It's starting to sound reminiscent of Saul. He's got all these great attributes. He comes from a great family. They're in the lowest tribe, but still a very wealthy, a very powerful family. And he assumes that Eliab is to be king over Israel. But God reminds him that he doesn't look on the outside, but rather on the inside. So in 1 Samuel 16, verse 7, it says, but the Lord said to Samuel, do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. One of the phenomenal differences with David is that he sees as God sees. When others see an impossible situation, David sees God's ability. When he sees a person, David sees their heart, where others may see their station in life, or their struggles, or their hardships. And so here we have where Samuel says this, 1 Samuel 13, 14. But now your kingdom, talking to Saul, shall not continue. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart. And the Lord has commanded him to be prince over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you to do. Can you imagine, even with Samuel, the difficulty of going before a person that he has grown to love? He has been his counselor, his mentor. He has spent nights awake before the Lord, interceding on Saul's behalf, unable to change the Lord's mind. The difference between Saul, and remember the first week into this, we talked, when we were talking about Saul, we talked all about his great attributes. He was tall, he was dark, he was handsome, he was very strong, he was wealthy, from a good family, good stock. You would want him to marry your daughter. He's a good man. But it was all on the outward appearances, all what he carried to the table. David, on the other hand, is out watching sheep. In fact, when Saul is appointed king, David's not even alive yet. But when David grows, and as he grows, he's out watching the sheep. And while he's out there, he's nurturing his relationship with the Lord. So the difference between a person, really, who goes to church and a person who has a growing, dynamic relationship with God is that they nurture that relationship. Just like the people around you if you want them to remain around you, if they're your friends or your families, whatever it is, whatever relationship you have with people, you have to nurture that relationship in all stratas of our society. It doesn't matter. We all have that relative. Most of us are that relative, at least to one other person, because we don't nurture that relationship for whatever reason. We don't know them. We don't like them. We don't, you know, click with them, whatever it may be. It's the same if you go to a store. You know how it is. You go to a store and you get treated badly. Now, most of us will not go to a store because we're treated badly once, so we'll go again. If they treat us badly the second time or the third time, we may decide, you know, there's another store right over here. I can go over there and at least be treated well. Why would I come here? They're not nurturing that relationship. So is it with God. So often we allow our relationship with Him to kind of get on the outs. And when we look at our society, remember Paul draws this distinction, this line, and he says the relationship you have with your husband or your wife is supposed to be a witness to the world of the relationship Christ has with the church. So the relationship you have with your spouse is supposed to be a witness to the relationship Christ has with the church. By implication, we should be nurturing that relationship with our spouse, because that relationship is a big part of our witness to the lost. So when we are in a place where we say, you know, I don't like my spouse, I'm tired of my spouse, I want a new spouse or a different spouse, or watching TV, I just want another spouse, God says, no, that relationship that you have with your spouse is one of your witnesses to the world of the relationship Christ has with the church. After being anointed prince over Israel, his father calls him in, says, hey, David, come here. David goes in from the fields, and Jesse's three oldest sons are out fighting for Saul. He says, David, I want you to take this food and give it to my sons, your older brothers, and I want you to give some to the commander there. I want you to bring something back. I want to know my kids are alive. I want to know what's going on the front lines. I can't get out there. Things are busy. Basically, Jesse wants to know that his kids are well. An important man in Israel, he is curious. He's curious to know to whom he's subject to. Is he still subject to King Saul, or is he yet again subject to the Philistines? And by the way, the Philistines have a pocket. Their main city that they hold is what we now call Jerusalem. So they have a stronghold there and a stronghold along the coastline. And this is why Saul isn't king. He's king in Gareb, not in Jerusalem, to the north. So David takes the food as told to him by his father, and he goes up to see his sons, and he gets up there, and the weirdest thing is happening. So there's a valley, and on one side of the valley, you have the Philistines. And they have a giant on their side. So going by the measurements of the Bible, he's about 9 feet tall, maybe a little more. His armor weighs 125 pounds. There are people in this congregation who do not weigh 125 pounds. And he's yelling, the giant is, across the valley to the Israelis, saying, look, we have this offer. Send one of your people out, and I will fight against them. If we win, Israel becomes subject to us, and you will serve us. If you win, then we must serve you. And Israel is sitting over there cowering. Who is going to fight this giant? David, however, is looking at the scene in an entirely different way. In 1 Samuel 17, verse 26, it said, and David said to the men who stood by him, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? See, David is seeing things as God sees them. Remember when you have Eli the prophet and he's in the house and he's sitting there and he prays that eyes would be open and you see the hosts of the angels around. When we are in a place where we feel alone, where we are overwhelmed, I guarantee you God is fighting the battle on our behalf, even though we don't see it. David had the innate ability to see, with his heart at least, into the spiritual realm. He comes down, he goes, look at this uncircumcised Philistine. I mean, he's pathetic. What are you doing? What are you offering to the person who takes him out? And who is he that he should oppose the armies of the living God? So first of all, he's making a point. He's like, first of all, he's not a Jew. He's not righteous before God. He's coming up against God. Remember, we're fighting this whole battle for God. David is kind of bringing everybody back into focus. You know, if you've ever been in a situation where there's a conversation and all of us, kind of like my sermons, you know, there's rabbit trails going everywhere. And you come back and you say, let's bring this all back into focus, and everything focuses. Oh, and there's clarity. A couple things that are interesting to see. Saul is the commander in chief, not David. Saul is. He's not ordering anyone to go down there and fight the Philistine. He could just say, hey, you. Go fight the Philistine. He says, I'll tell you what, I'll give you my daughter, Michal. And you can live tax-free in the land. Your father's house will not be taxed. Still nobody jumps. Gives the impression either that taxes were low or Michal was no prize. Not sure which it is. The interesting thing here, why is Saul allowing them to dictate the terms? The Philistines have sent out this giant and said, fight me. If you win, we serve you. If we win, you serve us. That's not how battles are fought. Saul could have said, who is this guy? Charge, send the army in, go and attack. For 40 days, they tremble in fear. There's a movie that we've probably all seen, the one with, it's Disney's Aladdin. And there's a scene in the movie, who's the thief? No. The star of the Aladdin, yeah. So Aladdin is sitting there with a sword, right? He's stolen bread, and he's standing, or the monkey has the sword. Abu. Abu has the sword. And the commander's like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, look, he has a sword. He's like, you're idiots. We all have swords. Oh, yeah. And they go chasing him. It's this is that scene. It's like, he's calling one person, come out and fight me. Why didn't Saul say, we're not going to fight you. We've come to fight your army. So, okay, we might lose 5 or 6 to you, but we will bring you down. But there's thousands. This is the reason this is important, and this is more academic than anything, but that's where my head goes. This is unusual in the ancient Near East. They didn't fight battles this way. This is unusual, unique as it were. Now, in Homer's Iliad and in the Odyssey, we see this. We see something close to it one other time in the Bible where it's two teams of 12. But this is unique. But this is God setting up a situation so that he could teach the whole world that if you have someone who has my heart, who sees things the way I see them, they can accomplish amazing things. Saul might have been a great military commander, but he wasn't a godly one. He didn't first say, well, let's offer a sacrifice. Let's get prophet down here, let's offer a sacrifice and let's see what God says about defeating the Philistines. He is down there now fighting the Philistines without seeking the Lord's favor, as it were, and he's not hearing from the Lord. Now, there's some difficulty here. Remember, David is anointed prince of Israel, and the Spirit of God leaves Saul and goes on to David. So arguably, Saul's at a little bit of a disadvantage. But Saul still isn't getting it. God has abandoned Saul, not because God decided, oh, I don't like Saul anymore, he's old news. He abandoned Saul because Saul abandoned him. God walked away from Saul when Saul could not be persuaded to return to God. So often in our lives, we wonder, why are things in disarray? Well, sometimes, in fact, I would say the vast majority of times, when we go through difficult times in our lives, it's because we have caused them. Not always, but most of the time. If you ever go on and just look or watch the show Cops, and you just see all these people, they're not being arrested because they just happen to be walking down the street. Most of them are being arrested because they've done something they shouldn't have done. When you watch Judge Judy, and when we look at our lives, how much drama is there? And the drama that's there, how much of that drama do we cause ourselves? So Saul didn't seek out the will of God during the battle. At the time of David's arrival, they've been standing there listening to this giant ridicule them for 40 days. And like I said, the Spirit of the Lord is with David. The Spirit of the Lord is with David because of David's faithfulness to God. It is not a chicken, what came first, the chicken or the egg situation, right? It isn't, is David faithful because the Spirit of God is on him? Or is the Spirit of God on him because he's faithful? It says in the Word, because of David and who he was, and because he was a man after God's own heart, David has the presence of the Spirit. Yes, it's Old Testament. And yes, things work a little bit different, but by and large, it's the same thing. If God's not dealing with our business, it might be because we're not taking care of God's business. Are we walking that walk? Are we reading our Word? Are we praying? Are we studying our Bible? When was the last time we've memorized a verse? Are we faithful in our tithes and our offerings? Are we faithful in our attendance? Hebrews chapter 10, forsake not the assembling together, as is the habit of some, but even more, we should be, as the day draws near, we should be gathering more and more to encourage each other and to build each other up. And we don't. We allow the world to lie to us and tell us it's not important. Saul, however, has taken note that the Spirit is now resting on David. We know the story. I can't just leave you hanging, I guess. David takes a stone. By the way, a couple things to note. Sometimes we have this picture of David as a young child out there on the battlefield. David has already been anointed king. Right? David is already prince of Israel, although Saul doesn't know it yet. He's slowly catching on. The power of the Lord is resting on David. And after he brings down Goliath, the people celebrate. Do they celebrate King Saul, who sat there and listened to this giant ridicule Israel for 40 days? No, they celebrate David. Saul was not without purpose. Numbers 22:28, you'll remember this story. The Lord opened the mouth of the donkey, and she said to Balaam, "What have I done to you that you have struck me these three times?" Remember, Balaam has been set on a mission, and he's decided to kind of do his own thing. Because, you know, when you hear from God and you decide, I think I'll do my own thing, God takes offense at that. It's one thing to have walked away, now you're not hearing God. It's another thing to hear God and not listen. Right? If you have teenagers, if you have toddlers, if you've ever been married, if you are involved in an earthly relationship, it's frustrating when someone doesn't hear what you say. It's maddening when they hear it and ignore you. We're okay with being offended, but we do not like to be ignored. Anyone here? I guarantee you, if I walk into the grocery store and you're standing in line and I step in front of you in line, you're not going to be happy. I'm going to photograph it, video it, put it on YouTube. You can set that up. You know, we don't like to be offended. We don't like to be ignored. We don't like, well, guess what? Neither does God. God is using Balaam, and Balaam is not wanting to be used by God. So God uses Balaam's donkey. And the donkey says to Balaam, "Balaam, look, there's an angel with a sword. He's not going to kill me because you're being disobedient. He's going to lop off your head. That's why I have stopped and I've wandered off the road and I won't go any further. Not because I'm being a disobedient donkey, but because your life is in danger. Sometimes the bad things that happen are because God is protecting us from worse things. More importantly, God is using Saul for his glory, even though Saul is refusing to do the work of the Lord. God is still using him. God's name is glorified. David eventually takes Goliath's sword and puts it in the tabernacle, because David never goes out and takes credit for killing Goliath. He always gives the credit to the Lord God. God can use anyone to accomplish his will, whether it's Saul, other unbelievers, donkeys, whatever it may be. But he wants to work with us. He wants to work through us. He wants to be glorified through our obedience to him. He wants our love. He wants our faithfulness. He wants our loyalty. He wants us to love what he loves. So 2 Samuel opens up with this. An Amalekite comes to David. Now, why is an Amalekite coming to David? Oh, that's right, because Saul, who was commissioned to destroy all of the Amalekites, right, didn't. So an Amalekite ends up finishing Saul's suicide. But this Amalekite comes to David to tell him of Saul's death and that of his son Jonathan. This young soldier has made an error. He assumes that because of Saul's opposition to David as king over Israel, that David is going to be overjoyed, that David is going to be relieved at the death of Saul. Saul hated him. He sought to kill him. And this kid thinks that David feels the same way about Saul. But remember, David sees things as God does, not as man. David loves God. He trusts God's will and his timing and his way. So for however many years, somewhere between 5 and 10 years, that David is king over Israel and is running from Saul and subject to Saul, two times having an occasion to kill Saul and not taking advantage of it, through this time, God is teaching David. And one of the things he's teaching him is patience, to trust God's timing. If you're certain of God's will in your life, then you're willing to allow God's timing to have its course. And that's hard. We don't like to wait. We like it right now. Second Samuel 1:12, and they mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and for Jonathan his son and for the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. David loved the Lord. David was faithful to the Lord. David trusted in the Lord and in his methods and in his timing. Most of us here today would agree that we love God, that we love the Lord. Most of us would say that we have been and are trying to be faithful to the Lord. Most of us would say that we have trusted the Lord for our salvation, but do we trust Him day to day? Is He our source of power? Is He our source of strength? Do we trust Him in the little things? We just sing the song, "What a Friend We Have in Jesus." Do we live that song? Do we cast our cares on Him? Do we allow Him to carry our burdens? He says that is what He wants. This week, I want you to actually memorize a verse. Write it down. There will be a test. I want you to memorize it. I want you to spend time meditating. And I know it's a lot to ask because it's actually two verses, Psalm 139, 23 and 24. "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. See if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my ways. See if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. A song of David, Psalm 139. Heavenly Father, we thank You that You have called us all to be a people after Your own heart, that You have called us to trust You, to obey You, to be loyal to You, to trust Your methods and Your timing in our lives. Father, that is for a purpose, and that purpose is that we would love You and bring glory to Your name. Also, that we could be used by You.